Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
Save big money now on new siding from LP Smart Side at Menards. Update and beautify your home with your choice of 13 timeless colors of pre-finished engineered siding. It's durable and includes a Sherwin-Williams factory finish paint warranty that means no painting for years to come. View our entire selection of siding from LP Smart Side today. And don't forget to check out our flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money at Menards.
And I finally asked him, I said, yo, do you want me to be your agent? He's like, if you buy me a glove, you can be my agent. I was like, wow, low bar. And he's like, seriously, just buy me a glove. I need somebody to buy my stuff so I don't have to pay for it.
Welcome into another episode of Baseball America's interview series from Phenom to the Farm. I'm your host, Kyle Beadujo. Today's episode is with Josh Kuznick, who spent nearly 20 years as a professional agent. We've had agents on the show still in the middle of their careers in love with the profession. This is not one of those interviews. A quick Google search of Kuznick or a look at his TikTok channel, you'll find a guy a little jaded on baseball and completely unafraid to speak his mind for better or worse. This is less of an interview and more just me trying to stay on top of a bucking Bronco as he drives through Florida. Full disclosure, Kuznick is blunt, brash, and doesn't really care what anyone, including me as an interviewer, thinks of him. But despite an outlook on the business of baseball that isn't exactly rosy, he does have 20 years of great stories, some of which we talk about today. First and foremost, we talk how a college kid who loves scouting minor leaguers suddenly becomes an agent nearly on a whim, and then life trying to sign players when you're their same age and have zero reputation, why he hates the draft, but also some good draft stories, and his general outlook on the profession. Again, this episode won't be for everyone, but I'd be lying if I said Josh Kuznick wasn't one of the most interesting people I've spoken to on the show, for better or worse. If you enjoy this episode, episodes of Phenom to the Farm drop every other Tuesday. You can go back and check out past interviews with former players, agents, broadcasters. We've had quite the spectrum. And if you haven't yet, leave a 5-star rating and a review on Apple Podcasts. Also, make sure to subscribe to BaseballAmerica.com and the BA Podcast feed for all amateur baseball and prospect news. We've got spring training going on. We've got 2024 draft rankings going on. We've got college baseball season going on. There's always a good reason to be subscribed and checking out Baseball America. And with that, let's talk to Josh Kuznick. All right, joining in for today's episode, he spent nearly 20 years as an MLB agent and is currently the biggest wild card on baseball social media, Joshua Kuznick. Josh, thanks so much for joining the show.
Thank you for having me.
I'm excited, a mix of excited, nervous. I really have no idea what, you know, what I'm going to get out of this. Like I told you before we started recording, I usually have a lot of research. I usually kind of have a buttoned up agenda. I've come across you on TikTok, on Twitter, telling your stories of 20 years in baseball. And I'm kind of just here to ask questions and hear your story, coming through as an agent starting at a very young age. But I want to start off with, like, when I, at least before seeing some of your videos, when I thought of agents, I always thought of, like, suit and tie, law school, Boris, Ari Gold, something like that. Is that you? And does that reflect most agents?
I got some Ari Gold, like, personality remarks during my career. But, like, I was the guy, like, if you ever see the photo of me with, like, Greg Giraldo, the comedian, like, I'm wearing a shirt from Entourage that says suits suck. So, like, you know, if they're the Entourage reference, you know, if I was to be anybody, I'd probably be Billy the director, just raging against authority. But when I came up, when I started when I was like 20 or 21 or 20, I had the same perception of agents. Like, Scott Boris was the dude back then, even then, like, that was the dude. And there were guys like Dennis Gilbert, who I got to work with over time, that were big time. And then Barry Meister. And those are, like, the big agents back then. They were all lawyers and suits and finance. And I'm not that, and I always liked the job of like the agent, but I never wanted to be the other thing. So I was fortunate enough to get into baseball through trading cards and autographs and collectibles, and through that I got into scouting. And one of the times I was scouting early on as a teenager at one of the minor league games, I had talked to the guy who found me. He was a guy named Joe Butler, which we'll get to all this, I know. And he asked me, I asked him a question, like this is going to answer like what I was. I asked him a question while I was bird dog scouting. And I said, what do we do if like I find Mickey Mantle? Like if I find Mickey Mantle, I'm 19 years old and I'm your assistant, not on payroll. Like I'm just doing this for free to learn. If I find Mickey Mantle, what happens? And he goes, you get a job. And I go, okay, word. But like, if I don't find Mickey Mantle, I can get a job. He goes, right. I was like, so what's the difference? He's like, it's a job. And I'm like, well, like if I find Mickey Mantle, how do I keep the money? And Joe Butler said, you've got to be an agent if you want the player's money. And I go, okay, cool. I'm going to go do that. And he laughed at me. He's like, good luck. And I was like, oh, okay. And that's what I did. I literally decided to go be an agent. I was already on my way to being a scout. I was like, oh, I don't like this. I'm just not going to do it anymore. And then he's like, you're just going to quit? You just got in. And I'm like, yeah, I don't care. I think it's bad. I'm going to go be an agent.
So what is the process for saying you're 20 years old and you're like, I'm going to go be an agent? So like typically if you're getting a job, you have to say, oh, I'm going to go apply at this place or get the necessary degree or certification or something like that. What is, I'm just going to go be an agent. Walk me through that.
Well, I was already a scout and I felt like I was learning scouting by assisting a real scout. And that's how I learned to look at some of the college kids in a more refined way instead of kind of notebooking it on Baseball America and BP and, you know, just kind of learning it all myself in a very rudimentary way that I used to scout baseball cards.
And you're doing this in a very baseball heavy area in Florida, correct?
Yeah, I was in Fort Lauderdale. I went to American Heritage, and that's where Hosmer, Castellanos, Adrian Nieto, Sildron, Devin Marrero, like that's my area. So Broward County, A-Rod was in Miami. So I'm just in a powerhouse where every year you've got countless first rounders. Like if I just want to be a baseball agent in Nebraska, that might be harder because there's probably less kids to go find. In Florida, you could just decide to go take a shot and be like, I'm going to go talk to first rounders, which you can't do that everywhere. I could do it here. Doesn't mean I'm going to get hired by them, but you can take a shot in Florida. You can take a shot in Texas, and you can take a shot in California. You got to be one of those three states because it's baseball year round. I mean, you could do it theoretically anywhere, but those three states, it is the easiest to be an agent, straight up, college kids, FYI.
So you're 20 years old. You decide, I'm going to go be an agent.
Yes.
What is step one of I'm going to go be an agent?
Telling my parents, and they were telling me what a not great idea it was. My dad's a lawyer and was a lawyer at the time. And I was like, I'm not going to law school. This is stupid. I'll just, you do it. And he's like, okay, I'll do it with you. And I started doing it with my dad instead of having to pay a lawyer, which and splitting it up that way, it was way smarter. And it was way better doing it with him than just starting from zero. So I was fortunate in that respect that I got to do it at that age with him from zero. We both got to screw up everything at the same time. Like we didn't know anything and we just kind of homebrewed it. And we're betting on me knowing how to scout and him knowing the legal side. And if I were to tell this to anybody, not to demean the legal side after 20 years, finding players is hard. Finding a lawyer is not hard. No offense. So what I do or did or do, you can't just go do that. You can go to law school and learn in a book how to go become a lawyer. You can't do that when you're a sports agent. So like, did I trip my way into it through a bunch of weird experiences? Oh, hell yeah. Could I tell anybody else how to go do it? I mean, yeah, you can get the steps, but ultimately the only thing that matters when you're an agent is, can you go find a player who's going to give you money and then have that player not fire you? Nothing else in this job matters.
Then let's get to that part then, because that's the part that I think I'm most interested about with your start, because you've got the law side handled.
Yes.
You have an eye for baseball. You have a passion for baseball and yep. Scouting and things like that. But like, it's easy to look at Joe Mauer in 2001 and say, oh, that guy's really good.
Yes.
It's another thing to walk up to a player who you think, I would assume you're you know, you're targeting guys who you hope
not Joe Mauer. I was not targeting Joe Mauer.
Yeah, well, I assume you're targeting guys who you think have a little something and could make a life for themselves in baseball, and saying, hey, I'm 20 years old. Will you entrust your career with me? Which to me is the of your story, of the things you post on social media. That to me is the craziest thing, because like I think about myself at 20, and I couldn't have trusted myself with my own the stuff, much less someone else's career. How did that first start to become, like, is the first client the hardest?
No, I've had other clients that were way harder, promise. In retrospect, the first client, looking back on it, like, there's tiers, right? Like, so who was my first guy I had out of high school? Who was my first guy out of the draft? Who was my first guy out of college? Who was my first guy out of JUCO? Who was my first minor leaguer? Who was my first big leaguer? Who was my first 40 man guy? That's how my brain works. That's how I split up all of those. So, like, not everybody's the same. So the very
who was
first...
one of one, though? Who was the first person who said, Joshua, I'm giving you my career?
It's funny. I'm driving by a Cracker Barrel right now as I tell this story. So the first player ever was a guy named Carmen Cali, who was a draft pick by the Cardinals in, like, 01. And he was from, like, FAU. And at 25 or 6, he was stuck in A-ball, and he threw hard. And he couldn't throw strikes, and he was bad, but he threw hard, and he had baseball cards, and he was a lefty. So I was like, oh, okay. So, like, I'm in the bullpen, and I'm talking to every single player in both bullpens at Roger Dean Stadium in Jupiter, like, in A-ball. So, like, in 02, I went to the Florida State League All-Star game as a fan. I was getting autographs. It was Joe Mauer, Curtis Granderson, David Wright, Francisco Liriano, Ryan Howard. They were all in the same Florida State League All-Star game. And, like, that was probably my sixth year going to Florida State League All-Star Games and going to the Florida State League. I started in 96 with the Vladimir Guerrero senior season, and I'd gotten to see Adrian Beltre when he was 17. I got to see Roy Halladay when he was an 18-year-old. I mean, so having seen that era of baseball from 96 to 02 in the Florida State League, ultimately culminating with me seeing Miguel Cabrera, Dontrelle Willis, Josh Willingham in Jupiter, and getting found by the White Sox scout who found me. I had a pretty good foundational repertoire, I guess, or encyclopedia to, like, kind of look back on and cross check guys. So, like, you have to comp everybody when you're scouting. Who does he remind you of? What does he do? Like, everything's comps. So I already came into it with a really good set of comps. That was, like, one of my skills of how to compare guys. So when I saw a guy like Carmen, when I had no clients at the time, I just literally focused on the guys that had gotten signing bonuses who had baseball cards. And I was like, okay, well, somebody gave them money. So, like, somebody smarter than me signed off on this. And what I'd realized with a guy like Carmen, and I finally asked him, I said, yo, do you want me to be your agent? He's like, if you buy me a glove, you can be my agent. I was like, wow, low bar. And he's like, seriously, just buy me a glove. I need somebody to buy my stuff so I don't have to pay for it. Because back then they didn't make any money and the team doesn't supply anything. So I go to my dad. I'm like, yo, this guy's serious. He just wants to, like, meet you. And he's like, I brought my dad over. He's like, bro, I didn't think you were serious. And I was like, no, I hear you. I'm 20. I get it. And he's like, you got to come to Marco Island and meet my parents before we sign off on this experiment. And I said, okay. So my dad and I go to Marco Island, like, the next week to go meet that guy's family. And my best friend at the time, who was still one of my best friends, shout out to Nick Foley, writer in North Carolina. He's actually an author for real. And we drove to a Cracker Barrel in Marco Island in Florida for my first meeting ever. And the parents are asking me the same questions that you kind of alluded to, which was, what are you doing here? Why would we hire you? How did this happen? What is this? You know, remember,
that's exactly the things they should have been asking.
Yes. Yes. And I let off the conversation, as my best friend and father liked to remind me, my first ever comment as a baseball agent, at least pantomiming one, was, I'm a huge NHL fan and baseball is not really my thing. That was how I let off my first meeting. Swear to God.
Swear. Smart. That seems like it would seal the deal.
That should tell you how easy it is to get hired, for real. I botched the whole thing, except my voice is good. I know how to speak. And I'm like, listen, we'll buy your stuff and I'll figure it out. So you're betting on me like I'm betting on you. Now, would this work for a good player? Absolutely not. Because if you're a good player, just don't bet on me. Hire a real agent. No offense. You don't need to make my dreams come true. The role of the agent is to make your dreams come true. But I was fortunate that I had players that let me have my dream too. So thanks to those guys. But yeah, Carmen's ultimately spoke to me, spoke to my father. Like, you know what? He's local. They're going to buy him stuff. You know, Carmen's had a bad career. He probably is going to get released. Who cares? So he ends up hiring us, and then going into that next season, he just figured it out. Light bulb went off. Older guy, you know, lefty, throws hard. Started throwing strikes, goes to Double A, goes to the Southern League All-Star Game, goes to Triple A, goes to the Fall League. As he's going to the Fall League, he's about to get called to the big leagues, and I get fired because he's like, yo, you don't know what you're doing. And that was the first guy to hire me. It was the first guy to fire me and the first guy to get to the big leagues.
So that whole time, were you following him around like a Jerry Maguire, Rod Tidwell situation?
No. That happened with other guys. That's the Lorenzo Cain story. Lorenzo Cain and I were that. Me and Lo, that story from 04 to 2010 is Rod Tidwell and Jerry Maguire with a bad ending. And he and I are okay now in general. But that was my Jerry Maguire was low, but, no, Carmen was, it's going to sound so great now, you know, especially if there's like TikTok captions. Carmen was the experiment to see if I could do this.
And with that though, the experience, so you sign a guy, what then is like, is there a playbook for this is what an agent is supposed to do? Like how much of this is just fumbling around in the dark and figuring
all
out what your job is?
100% of that's what the job is, period. Every agent does it. The job is to make your player money without him going to jail and screwing people over, right? Like don't break the law, make him money. That's the job. How do you do that? I don't know. Well, where do you learn to do that? I don't know. Did you go to college to learn that? What teacher that knows how to do this particular skill is teaching? Just curious.
That's a really good point. Because they anyone who knows how to do it is an agent.
Correct. Which is why every one of my teachers hated me while I was in college. Because I would laugh in their face, to their face, saying, you are making me do stuff that I'm telling you is wrong. And when I graduate, I'm going to come back and embarrass all of you. And for till I was about 25, oh boy. My score settling vendetta did not have a good antenna back then. It's a little better now. And I would pick the dumbest grudges. Like you said, I couldn't do this, teachers. They're like, why do you even matter? Don't listen to them. That's the point. But I'm just saying, if you could teach this, you'd be doing it. Or you'd be me warning people like, yo, this is what it is. I'm not taking anybody's money for this. Like there's no class, not doing it. I get asked all the time to be teaching this stuff or going to sport management worldwide. No, you don't need any of that stuff. It's what you just said. Good luck. Figure it out. It's super hard.
So how long did it take you to feel like I have a grasp on doing this? Like I am a competent agent.
I started in 03. 2016.
Okay. So that's a significant gap. That's a learning curve.
Yep. Because by that point I had done everything. I'd done arbitration, pre-arb, free agency, first round pick, draft, releases, arrest. By 2016, I had hit every kind of contract, multi-year, 1 year, minor league, option, everything. So by 16, I had done every single contract in baseball. So at that point, I'm like, all right, I got this.
So for now, let's stick to how you, so you're acquiring players. We've talked to your first guy and you mentioned that there are a lot of different firsts. How did you start to build what your sales pitch is once you had something of an idea of this is what I do in this job? Like how, you know, beyond I'll buy you stuff, how are you finding guys and how are you selling guys on, hey, I will make your career better because of yada, yada, yada.
In the beginning, it was, I will make your career better by buying you stuff. That's it. And I'll talk to the team for you. Like that.
Kind of like dating.
That. Yeah, it is. And it's pointless because if that's all you're bringing, you're getting fired when they get to the big leagues because you bring them nothing. That's a hard thing to learn. So, you know, that was a fun one, but I signed the first guy and like a week later I had three guys, signed two of his teammates. That was it. And then after that happened, I signed two of his teammates. He goes, I've got a guy on another team, you know, in the league here. You want to sign him? I signed him. And then I signed two of his teammates. And then by the end of the year, I had 12 guys in a month.
So that's a lot of gloves, a lot of cleats,
yep.
A lot of gear.
Yep.
How are you? When did you first make money from this job?
2016. I was out of debt and everything. I mean, I make money as in like a profit. 2016. Now, granted, I had some mid-career setbacks, so I normally was charting to make money after like 8 years, but it takes 7-8 years.
So beyond buying stuff, as you get into this, what does a good agent do? What did you start learning, realizing, like, if I want these guys to keep me beyond just my credit card clearing to get them a glove, what did you have to do to make yourself valuable?
Well, my perspective now or my perspective then?
Let's go with perspective then. And then the now.
My perspective then, that's not a consideration. It's make guys money, make sure they don't spend money, make sure they don't go to jail. That's it. It's not a complicated job. Like, you know, I wake up every day expecting to get fired by everybody. Nobody should invite that anxiety into their life. Like, it's a stupid job to have. It's better to, you know, be the talent than to manage talent. You know, they were always those mean barbs that, you know, agents generally represent people with talent because they lack their own. I found that to be true also. Agents are generally the most unimpressive people I have ever met in my life in any field, which is why I love not being one.
Well, when you get started in this, what is your day-to-day like? You mentioned you get 12 or so clients to start out with. Like, how are you spending your time? Where is home base?
I mean, 24 hours a day is on the phone trying to get free shit so you don't have to pay for it, straight up. Like, it's just calling companies and getting free stuff in the minor leagues so you don't have to pay for it. That is literally all the job is when you represent minor leaguers and no draft picks and no big leaguers. You're just representing guys that aren't making any money that nobody wants. Great job. Go sign a million minor leaguers and tell me how successful you are.
At that point, were you having any conversations with clubs, or do you have to have a different caliber of player to start talking to big league clubs?
No, the clubs are stuck talking to me. As soon as I'm listed as the agent, they have to. So I got thrown right into it. If anything, those early years got me in front of all of the front offices, and that's where it helped me the most. Like, did it help the player? Probably to some degree, getting free stuff, you know, varying degrees of help. But I would say, you know, being a buffer to the team would be the primary important thing an agent does. And even at the time, that was my primary responsibility, to be the buffer to the ball club. But like in reality and in practice, it was just minor leaguers who didn't want to spend any of their own money, who wanted free stuff. That is what the job was.
When you're in your early 20s and having conversations with these organizations, being the buffer to the ball club, how much general imposter syndrome is there? Do you feel like you should not be doing this, or is it like, hey, this isn't that hard?
For me, I didn't think it was that hard. I mean, I don't mean to be a tool about it, but like, man, I've seen some stuff. This is baseball. It's show business. It's no different than a movie or a TV show. It does not matter. Now, there are things that happen in the game that matter to people in their lives individually, but this is show business. So I could screw up and I'll be fine. It was never that important. So like, the players' jobs, that's important. Their livelihood, that's important. Me being an agent, that was important. But like, baseball important? Like, come on, dude. Like, I never lost sight of what I was doing. You know, I used to always make fun of the people at the winter meetings. I said, you guys think you're all famous and important within this building. Go outside and see how many people know any of us.
When you were repping minor leaguers, what did the typical conversation with a big league organization look like?
Yeah, if it was a non-40-man guy and it was just a minor league director, they would just – those conversations never really changed. Like, the teams got to know me, so we worked a general like work rapport of how I operated. So even now I tend to operate similarly to how I did back then. I think teams are not super accustomed to dealing like someone like me, which is an advantage in and of itself, but you've got to have the right guy to want to deal with me. Now, some people want the suit, that's fine. You know, if I had a kid now and they were getting drafted, I would hire Scott Boras 100%. Everything else is ridiculous. Like, anything anyone else could tell me is dumb. Like, if my kid was good enough, I would hire Boras. Like, that's the answer. And like, what if he gets hurt? Well, then he won't be good enough. What if he doesn't play well? Then he won't be good enough. Well, what if he is good enough? Well, then hiring Scott Boras would be fine, wouldn't it?
So who's your first draft guy then? Walk me through the draft is my... I don't know, but one of my favorite things about baseball. I think
that's
it's
funny.
Fascinating.
I hate it. I hate it more than anything in the entire world.
You hate because of the working it or what it means for the players? Because like I'm fascinated by the construct, even though I think it does suppress the salaries of the labor.
Well, I mean, that's the part I hate. It's like asking me, like, you know, other than that, Mrs. Lincoln, how was the show? Like, what? How do I answer that?
So then walk me through your first time in the draft then.
There are several. I had a draft in Follow for my very first negotiation ever, a kid named Logan Williamson. And that was just a scout offered him $20,000, and they told him he had an agent. Then it went to like $40,000. And that was it. But like my first draft guy, I'm trying to think who it was. Oh, yeah, it was. Yeah, it was Danny Jordan. It was a kid from Gulliver Prep in 04 or 03. Yeah, it was 03. And Chris Garcia had gotten drafted from the Yankees in the fifth round that year. He was a converted catcher that became a pitcher. He ended up going to the big leagues and won a ring with the Nationals. He Garcia, should have been a perennial Cy Young guy, but mentally was not there for that kind of role and kept getting hurt. But Danny Jordan was a kid that I had that year. I saw him in Key West while I was scouting Chris Garcia. And hit two home runs in Key West that just mammo bombs at this crazy ass park that just wasn't a good park for hitters. And I just really liked the ability and the body of scouting the whole year. And he ended up getting drafted like really, really late, like the 27th round. And he ended up not signing that point. And then I think he went to school. And then he ended up signing with the White Sox and was a minor leaguer at one point out of Broward as a DNF, but like he ended up not doing anything. But my first exposure to the draft and dealing with scouts, like it kind of just illuminated what the process was going to look like until obviously they redid the rules. But that first year looked exactly like every other year did to me for a decade. So even coming into it, it was just dealing with each team's individual scouts regarding your players. You get a feel for organizations and which guys are more upfront than others, which guys get it and don't, and which guys are easy to deal with and not. And for me, even back then, I'm a professional bridge burner. So like if it was a team that was an issue, I would tell the player like, yo, I don't want to deal with these guys. Like, I don't care if they draft you, it's going to be a problem. So it's better just not even talk to them. So I was a problem to a lot of teams in that respect. But yeah, the first draft was with Danny Jordan. It just kind of resembled all of them. And really, just the money is the only thing that's different between a 26th rounder and a first rounder. Like, it's just all numbers.
So when you're working with a kid or working with his family and some, and you guys come up with a number, what's the process of taking that around to teams and try to figure out where he's going to slide in, who's actually a contender to pay him that or pick him?
Yeah, I never did that. I think that's stupid. I think it's dumb. I think a lot of that's overblown, and I think a lot of it's just ridiculous PR nonsense. I don't even think that's how it really works. Like, there's very rarely a scenario where a player has a number that they have mapped out and they're like, well, this is what it's going to take. Like, most of it's freaking thin air. Like, guys are crazy and just you're like, well, this is what so-and-so got, so I should, right? But this is real life and this isn't Madden and that's real money, and you saying that makes you sound very stupid, and you should think of these things before, you know, flippantly turning down $500,000 random players. So, you know, you get to that point with coming up with a number. I would only work with kids, and this is me limiting for me, I guess, and I had first rounders, so whatever, but I would tell, you know, teams, you know, I'd have kids that would get on board with it, and I would call teams like, the kid's gonna go play, you know, whatever the signability is for the round is, just give me that money. And they're like, well, how much do you want? I'm like, if he goes in the first round, give me that money. Well, what if we offer less? I'm like, well, then he won't sign. Well, what if we give him a slot? Like, then he'll take it. What do you want me to tell you? And that's just generally how I operated. But like in other cases, I had Adrian Nieto go get $376,000 in the fifth round. That was a different story. I had Juan Carlos Sulbaran get $500,000 in the 30th. Like, you know, they all kind of, they're their own stories, but generally in the draft, I would just tell teams the truth. And that was kind of my edge, is I didn't play any of those games. I just told teams what was up 100% of the time. And I dared them to catch me lying once. It didn't happen.
You mentioned those guys getting way over slot. Would you say those are the big successes, or when you walk out of a draft feeling like, feeling like you just killed it is when you can get a kid who, you know, say drops out of round wise their talent, but you end up getting them the money after the fact? Or is it getting the kid who's drafted in the first round and getting that slot?
I don't even think that way. The round never matters ever. Like, ever. It's irrelevant. It's just wherever the money is. Like, I couldn't care less if you gave a kid 1.8 million in the 20th, you know, the round is, people don't understand the baseball draft. They look at it from like the fan marketing perspective. Within the game, the round never matters. It does not matter that a kid was a first rounder if the third rounder from that same team got a higher bonus than him. Like, it just doesn't matter. So when you talk about rounds and stuff, like, I don't ever think of it that way. I just remember what guys signed for. So, you know, Nieto getting 376 in the fifth, was that a triumph? Given the circumstances, yeah. But, like, that was a nightmare because he should have just gone in the third round. So,
swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Save big money on your outdoor project now at Menards. We have everything you need to keep your outdoor power equipment running smooth, so you can keep that lawn in tip-top shape or enjoy some time on your boat. Right now, all FVP, lawn and garden, and marine batteries are on sale through May 5th. Check out our entire selection of FVP batteries today and view our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals.
Save big money at Menards.
Oh,
so well, then walk me through that. Like, why didn't he?
Makeup and injury issues. That, I mean, part of it's his fault. But then I got a gift, you know, at the time the Nationals just took him in the fifth round. They're like, this guy's talent's so good, we'll work out a deal. You know, we're just going to take him. They didn't even call me. They literally saw this kid who was a projected first to third rounder fall to the fifth. And they made the organizational determination without me. That they were just going to take him. They didn't even call me. They didn't do any talks, nothing about the number, nothing about him. Hey, does he want to sign for 150 or whatever the slot was? You know, we know he wanted a half a million. Like, what's up now? They just were like, you know what? We'll take him, see what's up. So I barely spoke to them. And then, you know, coming up until the deadline, Jim Bowden started playing games with me. And then Mike Rizzo and I ended up working it out for 376 when the slot was 180, I think.
So it sounds like in these first, you know, as you're getting the hang of this and you're juggling all these, you're figuring this out. Was this fun?
I mean, now it looks, I think so. Some things were fun. I eventually I got to a point where I loved it because I got to be me, and that was short lived. So, you know, it was incongruous being an agent and representing other people and doing the best job possible while being myself. I did not want to do it anymore. I thought it was too compromising to me. And that tightrope walk of managing, representing other people's careers versus what I wanted to do, I don't want to do it anymore. Cause I don't really, sorry, you're gonna have to edit this. I don't give a fuck. about anybody else's interest for money over what I want to go do.
So what parts of the job did you like?
I like scouting. I like finding people. I still do that. And scouting is a skill that I love that I have. I love that I can go find good players before anyone else without the internet. I love that I can do that. It's a cool skill to have. But I mean, Ronald Acuna Jr., there's a video on TikTok of me with him. And he asked me, you know, I scouted his father. True story. I scouted his dad at the Florida State League All-Star Game, one of those games we were talking about. And I scouted his dad, and I have a bunch of autographs from Ronald Acuna Sr. And when I was getting his autograph, he was holding Ronald Acuna Jr. when he was 3 years old or whatever it was. So I met Ronald Acuna when he was 3. And so I see him as an adult after he's Acuna. And I'm telling him about the time I met his dad, scouted him. And I said, I used to be an agent. I worked for Brantley, Kane, Jeffress, Kenley Jansen, all these guys. And he's sitting there with his friends, who one of them wants to be an agent. And he looks at me in English and he's like, why didn't you want to be an agent anymore? What was so bad? And I go, oh, it was the players. 100%. The players are the reason I don't do the job anymore.
Well, you mentioned a few names, and I want to get into those, especially let's start off with Lorenzo Cain, because this is a story that you have on your TikTok. And I would encourage anyone who's listening to this to go check out your TikTok. I think it's What Josh Says.
What will Josh say?
So a lot of stories on that, but it's, you know, early. He's in junior college, hasn't played baseball a long time. Walk me through the process of finding and signing Lorenzo Cain.
Yeah, Lo was a TCC. He was a drafted foul of the Brewers at the time, and I was a sophomore at FSU, and I was talking to the White Sox guy that had found me the year before, and he's like, can you watch some guys in the area for me? And let me know what you think. And he's like, you know, go to FSU, go watch Stephen Drew, you know, go watch Mark Sauls, who was a DNF that was actually drafted by the Twins and turned down like $800,000 to go to FSU. And then he got hurt and never signed. So sorry, Mark Sauls, that's a tough story now. And he said, go to TCC. They got a draft and follow named Michael Saunders. You remember the big Canadian like outfielder from Seattle? And,
yes.
Okay. Yeah. So Saunders, he said, go watch Saunders. So I'm watching Saunders and everybody's there watching Michael Saunders. And he was obviously like, to me at that point in my career as a 21-year-old or 20 or whatever, I was 21. I was like, it was obvious to me Michael Saunders was going to be a guy like a big leaguer, maybe an all-star. Like you just watched him then compared to everybody else. And you're like, oh, okay, cool. And I did forget to mention this. My first year in college, before I was scouting, I went to a bunch of games to see Clemson and Chipola and all these different teams. And at Chipola, I actually got to scout Russell Martin and Adam Loewen. So, like, I was around the circuit a little bit before I'd even gotten to be an agent. And when I went to go see TCC play Chipola, Chipola had, like, 7 big leaguers on that team, literally. Matt Gammel, Darren Ford, Tyler Flowers, Renee Tassoni, Jay Chapman. There were 7 or 8 big leaguers on that team. Steve Clevenger was on the next year team. But anyway, there were like literally in 2 years, Chipola had like 11 guys who played in the big leagues. And I'm watching Chipola play TCC, and the 2 center fielders for both of those teams ended up being drafted followers of the Brewers. So they already belonged to clubs. I'm like, oh, okay. So that's not totally crazy. They're late round DNFs. And it was Darren Ford and Lorenzo Cain. And I loved Kane, and he's better than Saunders. Like, it's just, to me, it was obvious. I didn't know anything about him. And I tried to talk to him, and he ignored me. So at the time, I told you this off air, I had an assistant my sophomore year of college that I'd met at a baseball card show. I met his parents. Like, that was a longer story, but I met this kid who was younger than me, and he wanted to work in baseball. He knew I was just starting. And I said, if you want to help me out while we're at FSU, go for it. He's a local guy back home. And he's like, okay. So I gave him my business cards. At the time, I said, give these business cards to that kid to give to his mom. And it was Lorenzo Cain. So my first contact was my friend gave my business card to Lo. And then Lo had his mom call me. And then I started talking to them and offering to help. And they were skeptical, which wisely so. And then they had actually called a scout about me. And that guy ended up vouching to some degree, but not before the scout screwed over Lo hardcore. Like, they made sure he signed with the Brewers before he had an advisor and cost him like $10,000 to $15,000. And then they told him to hire me. And then he hired me.
And so that working relationship seems like something that you were very passionate about. And that was a guy who had a lot of ABs to make up.
Yep.
You know, a guy who hadn't played a lot of baseball. What was your, your life working for Lorenzo Cain for 6 years as he slowly got to the point where he became big league Lorenzo Cain?
In the minors, my dad and I had to do everything for him, for baseball stuff. So he went out to Arizona as like a 19-year-old to go play in the AZL. It was the first time he's ever like on a plane. And he went to the AZL and hit like 370 and like cold. And this is a guy who played 1 year of high school baseball, like literally played 1 year of high school baseball because his mom wouldn't let him play sports in high school. And the only reason he was allowed to play high school baseball is because he needed a ride home every day to the trailer park that he lived in Madison, Florida. So the coach said, if you play for the team, I'll take you home every day. Literally, that is the story of how Lowe started playing baseball. And he was at TCC because somebody saw the athleticism, got him to TCC. And then that's where he started to develop. Brewers draft him. The same guy who got him into TCC is a DNF and then signed him and cost him a bunch of money because that's how the business works. You know, it's just business. So, you know, we're allowed to screw people, right? And then he gets to pro ball and he hits 360. And I'm waiting for him in the Tallahassee airport to pick him up like the first time since he signed. And he gets off the plane and he walks right past me. He has no idea who I am. I'm like, bro, seriously? I was the only person in the airport waiting for him. And we go back to his place. And I was in college the same time, like, he lived in Tallahassee. So, like, all 4 years I was in school, Lowe would come home and we'd hang out while I was in college. I signed his best friend. I was best friends with his girlfriend. I'd be there every night playing games. Like, I was, like, in. Like, I was tied with his mom. Like, still love Pat. And then throughout the minors, like, he got to Brevard. And he sucked. Like, he started the season 0-40 and almost quit. He stopped eating food. My dad and I had to go up there to like force him to eat. And like, he wanted to retire and he got through it. And then he got to AA and was good. And then he made his debut, or like, he got called up and I had to fly to Milwaukee and I met him at the airport. And then the Brewers sent him down without even playing him. So he didn't get to make his debut. And then they ended up ultimately calling him up. So I had to go back. But I was there. I was there through absolutely everything through his early career, fall league and everything. Other agents tried to meet with him. Like, they offered him a $5,000 check one time. Like, just fire Josh. I hate him. And Lowe stuck through everything. And then one bad day with Lowe of him being in a mood got me fired.
And, I mean, tell me more.
Which part?
Yeah, what got you fired? What is this bad day?
He started yelling at me about a Nike deal and why he didn't have one. And other agents were in his ear saying, well, there's a Nike deal. Josh keeps screwing up. And for some reason, it's the one time he believed it. There was no Nike deal. It was just an agent in his ear. And I think he was just wanting to do something else and did not handle it great. And that was it. And I didn't really talk to him for years after that. And then in 17 or 18, whenever Jeffress went back to the Brewers, I had to see Lowe all the time. And then, you know, eventually we were all right, like socially. But, you know, at the same time, oof, cost me a bunch of money. You know, there's nothing stopping him from writing a check in retirement, just saying.
he did well for himself. You mentioned Jeffress and guys like that. How much work did you have to do? Like, how did you wind up representing first rounders who, again, if you're a first rounder, there is, you know, you could go to Scott Boras or one of these huge agents. What drove these guys to decide to hitch their wagons to you?
Me? Like, I didn't work like me. I was awesome. Like, guys just hired me. I was good. Like, that was it. Like, I don't know how to explain this correctly without being a complete tool, but like, I'm the reason they hired me. Like, how do you answer that? I signed 75 big leaguers in 20 years. I signed hundreds of players I worked for over the years. You know, some guys fired me, some didn't, but I'm the reason they hired me. It was me. Spoiler. Just saying. That's why. Because I was awesome at my job and I let them know it and I showed everybody how good I was at it. And I tell everybody the same thing. Do you know how awesome I had to be at the actualities of the job for me to act this way? No one fucking hired me because of my likability.
Well, then I walk me through that more then. You mentioned like how you handled the draft and things like that. Like, what made you, again, like, what makes an awesome agent, especially with the retrospective you have now of, you know, 20 years in the business and being, you know, being an adult, like what makes a good agent? Why did you have success?
For me, and again, this is a rest in peace to your editing, for real. I'm not doing this on purpose. I don't give one fuck about anything that people have to say about me at all on the outside. If it does not affect me and I cannot control it, I don't worry about it. So for me, I can just focus on my work. What you tell me about my job, what fans think, what teams think, what other people think, I don't care. It doesn't affect me. It doesn't change anything. It doesn't change how I operate. It doesn't change how I work. So what someone says to me, it doesn't alter what I'm doing if at work, let's say. So if you have someone like that, tell me the argument a team's going to make to me that's going to work on me when I know something. I can already spare you the argument. There's nothing they could tell me. I'm the most frustrating person on earth to have to deal with in a negotiation. That's what makes a good agent.
What is your, like, what would you say your biggest success is? Like, where you...
Jeffress, the fact that you've heard of him. The fact that he made an all-star team. The fact that he made millions of dollars. That's my success in my career. It's also the biggest screw-up of my career. So I got both with that one.
It sounds like you, I mean, I'm just trying to soak all this in. What are, like, the high points of
being
this
an
job?
Agent?
Like, what?
Nothing. Money. Nothing else. There's nothing else. It is a job to make money. There's nothing else. There's no fan side of this. There's no career mode where you get accolades. It's a job for money. It's a job about making money for other people. Nothing else matters that you ask me. No offense.
None taken. No, I appreciate the candor.
It's about making money. What I liked about doing my job is wholly irrelevant. It's my own. That's my point of view. And if people want to hear that, that's great. But if you're asking me about the agent job, nothing matters in that job except making players money. That's it. There's nothing else. This will be like a 2-minute podcast if that was it. Scott Boras only cares about money. The players who hire him only care about money. And the teams that sign those players only care about money. So when I hear fans complain about players wanting a lot of money, I laugh every time, because you should be directing that at the ownership who's screwing the fans 24/7.
I had a question prepared for, like, you know, so you're not an agent anymore. What made the decision? It seems like I don't really need to ask. It seems like it's not a business that you particularly enjoy or enjoyed towards the end of it.
I enjoy any of it. I like scouting to a point. I don't like the business of baseball, period. Everyone else seems to find it interesting because they're not in it. Have you ever found someone in it that found it interesting? No, because we all know. What's interesting? I'm really asking, what is different about what I do any more than whoever the hell Tom Cruise's agent is, except they make way more money than me. They probably do way
more. Tom Cruise's agent does well.
Yeah, but they probably do way more things than Scott Boras even does. Like, I know Scott does a ton, but I'm just saying people treat athletes differently than celebrities, like regular celebrities that aren't athletes, because they have a skill that's everybody has at some point, I guess. And when you see Tom Cruise get $100 million for a movie with a back end and it bombs, nobody ever thinks, like, oh, he's overpaid. Movie tickets are too high because of Tom Cruise. We got to, like, nobody does that in sports. The best thing I've ever heard about the finances of sports and the business of sports is somebody from MLB on the executive side. Like, I'm talking a VP on the media side, like one of the higher ups making seven figures. He came up to me one day, because we're very similar, like blowing it up on the inside. And he said to me that, you know, if owners could just have publicly subsidized stadiums, right? Have those publicly subsidized stadiums filled with those taxpayers, and then have those taxpayers buying beer, and then have no games being played at all, right? That is what the owners would do. So when people ask me about what I liked and didn't like, that'd be like asking, like, a guy, like a hedge fund trader, like, what did you like about being a hedge fund guy? And if they told you they personally enjoyed being like a hedge fund guy, like Patrick Bateman, you'd probably assume they're a serial killer. I don't know anybody that takes joy out of being an agent. Promise you. If anything, we're all just like getting stuff out that we should be doing in therapy.
I mean, in that case, I have to. So, like, what is getting out of being an agent? Is it turning over all your clients? Like, how do you decide, like, one day I'm done with this? I'm no longer representing anybody. Is it as simple as, sorry, man, you got to find
someone
else?
Remember the earlier part of the story where I was like, I'm not going to be a scout anymore. I'm just going to be an agent. It was like that. I'm not going to be an agent anymore. I'm just going to do this. It was exactly like that. And I just called all my players. I said, hey, if you want me to get you an agent, I have someone. If you don't want me to get you an agent and you're good, that's fine too. But let me know. And that was it. Took like a week.
Did anyone take that poorly?
I didn't like die. So like they all still call me. I just won't deal with the teams for them. Like I'll still call me before the other guy. But I, you know, anybody that's like new or a referral, or if I scout somebody or like I'm at a game, I'll just send it to like an agent that I know. Some of the frustrating ones for me being on the outside is like, for instance, I knew about Ellie De La Cruz before he had an agent by about like 3 months, and I couldn't speak Spanish and I couldn't find a Spanish speaking agent to go talk to him. It sucked. But like short of that, man, like it's just great being out. Everybody on the inside that's like everybody on the inside that's still doing this on a grind day to day calling teams, bro. I have like 9 agents calling me as a consultant to call my connections to help them with their players. Like I do whatever I want now. It's the great being on the outside, not being certified by the PA is the greatest thing on earth for me. I'm not limited by any of the restrictions anymore. And I can mock them mercilessly to people like you. I love it.
So what is, I mean, this question might have no answer. What is your next like 5 to 10 years look like? Like, do you ever want to do, I know you do baseball cards and collecting and things like that. And that's become an avenue for you. Like, do you ever want to do anything in baseball, any aspect of baseball again?
In what sense? Like for an ops, like for a team? Like I'm a special assistant right now. Like I help ball clubs like right this second. I'll never take a title. I'll never go work for a team. I'll never draw a paycheck, and I'll never work for a player as an agent. Will I do marketing for players or agencies? Oh yeah, totally. Like I was, you know, doing tons the last 3 years, building up Perfect Games like program for memorabilia and cards and signatures. That's like a whole other fiasco. But I'm not just buying cards. Like I'm on the manufacturing rights side. Like I talked to Panini, I talked to Fanatics. Like I got several skills that are marketable. And again, none of it's based on my likability. Thankful for me.
Well, I will say like, this has been by far one of the more interesting interviews I've had on the show. Definitely don't feel like I've steered the ship on this one.
Sorry.
Yeah. And I would encourage folks, if you enjoyed this, definitely go check out your social media. I think you're even a little more candid with that than you are here.
Well, I mean, we buried the lead on one thing. So while I was an agent my entire career, I was also a stand-up comic. Like I opened for Hedberg and Giraldo, and I hung out with Jim Jefferies and Tosh like back in the day, and Hannibal Buress. Like I had my time in comedy, like while I was an agent. And one of the things I faced as an agent is 24/7 people telling me I couldn't do both. And I could, and I did, but I legitimately hated the tightrope. And I have a whole hour of other complaints about the comedy world of business and marketing, which kind of overlaps a lot of this, but like, I'm just saying, if anybody was ever in college and was like listening to this, they're like, I want to be an agent one day. Okay, go do it. Straight up. Like the Mark Cuban speech, go do it. Go to a game, go talk to players, go talk to team officials, and go do it. The worst thing that I see every single year at the winter meetings is a bunch of kids that are like they're 20s, like 20 to 30. I'm 41. 20 to 30, and they'll go to the winter meetings. And they'll pay Sport Management Worldwide money, or they'll like stand there and do nothing, and they'll waste the opportunity of a lifetime. You ask, like, how did you do it? Guess what I did? Much like this interview, I don't stop talking. I went to every single person alive and asked them questions until somebody gave me the answers that I needed, whether it was a scout, a vendor, a TV person, a baseball player, a retired player, an owner. It didn't matter. And I just collected all those people and all those contacts, and I did all of that by myself by asking them. My very first winter meeting ever. This is a good scouting name for this podcast, for real. Logan White, who to me is like the greatest scout of a generation. Logan White was my hero when I was 20. He was my favorite scout, reading about him in Baseball America. In my first winter meeting, I go with my dad in Orlando, and I see Logan White from afar, and I'm like 20. And I go to my dad, I go, oh my God, that's Logan White. And think about it, like, in reality, no one knows who Logan is. Logan is my friend now. Logan laughs at this story all the time because it is insane that a 20-year-old looked up to Logan White. But my dad went up to Logan, said, my son's a huge fan, we're starting to see. I'm telling you, Logan White came over that day. I had nothing and sat with me for an hour and talked to me about everything. And it's the same thing Joe Butler did, and it's the same thing Jack Sorensic did. And now, in real life, my best friends in the game, outside, like, now that I'm out of the game, the people I'm closest with are GMs and presidents. Nick Kroll, David Stearns, Matt Arnold. Like, these are guys that I came up with. And the reason I'm giving the soliloquy at the end is that all happened because I randomly just asked people, you know, questions. And then when they would ask me something, I would tell them the truth. And that's it. And then one day, like, I'm in a position to help people. So there's going to be a kid who asks me, like, how do you do this? I'm going to tell him, and I'm going to be, listen, I did this for you because someone did this for me. Now you got to do it when you make it for somebody else, and that's the trade. That's kind of how I always operated. But, like, to summarize everything, if you love baseball, like, you're a fan, you're diehard, and you like the inner workings, don't work in baseball. Then it'll be everything else for you. Like, I don't know all the stuff about the game because I hate it. I know all of it because I loved it. And then I got to see what really happens, and now I'm warning everybody about what it was and is. And if you don't think an organization that is owned by 30 billionaires in America is solely for profit, then I don't know what I could help you with otherwise. Like, I can't talk to you then. Like, that's what it is. So if you go into it knowing it's just about money, you got a chance to work in the sport. If you go into it as an idealist because you love the game, good luck to you. You're stuck working with people like me who will end you.
You know, typically I end these episodes and say, like, hey, Josh, that's all I've got for you. Thank you so much for joining the show. That's really not all I've got for you. I have, I think, a million other
questions.
Can we
do like five more? I've got time. I'll do it. And you can cut what you want, for real.
I mean, at this point, there's so much small, but like you... It goes from, like, you mentioned, like, Ellie De La Cruz. Like, I would love to hear about guys who got away.
I'm going to do this. This is awesome. So I'm not kidding. I think enough time has passed that I can actually tell this to you. This will be like, even though we've talked for an hour, this will be like the one that fans care about. Like, oh, wow, inside pool. So I told you, one of my real life friends is Nick Kroll, like the GM of the Reds. That is my real life friend. I love him. Like, nothing to do with work. We just text nonsense to each other. Like, that's a real life friend I have. And one day, like in 2021, I went heavy on Anthony Volpe. Anthony Volpe is my favorite player of a generation. He is the greatest makeup ever. Everyone should buy his rookie cards. That is the greatest investment ever. It will never, like, unless, like, I'm wrong, which, you know, totally possible, but that is the safest bet I've ever seen since, like, Joe Mauer. But anyway, I'm like heavy into Volpe, and I'm like talking to all my friends, like, how is everyone missing this guy? Like, before he was Volpe. And I'm talking to everybody, and Nick and I were talking about him one day, just BSing. And he's like, no, the approach is good. And like, that was it. And then that was it. He's like, oh, you're in cards again. Cool. 2 months go by, 2021. And I get a call from my friend at like 11 in the morning. And he never calls. It's like a text thing. Like, hey, what's up? Or here's the stupid meme. But I get a call. I'm like, you good? He goes, I had to call you. I'm like, okay, that's never happened ever. And my dad did the first negotiation ever with Kroll in his career. Juan Carlos Silveron, the $500,000 30th rounder. It just so happens, like, that was my dad and Nick Kroll's first deal ever. And that's not why we're friends. It's just add on. So he's like, I had to call you. I'm like, okay, but you're the GM of the Reds. Like, you did not need to call me. He's like, no. You're the only person that will get this that I can call who doesn't work in baseball, and I have to tell someone. And I go, what? Okay, I'm listening. And he goes, so my scouts for 6 months have been yelling at me to get to Florida. And I go, okay. He goes, they said, you got to see this kid. You got to see this kid. You got to see this kid. I'm like, I saw this kid in spring. And they're like, no, you have to see him now. So it's like August at this point. And he goes, I go to Florida. And I'm like, you're in Florida? You didn't call me? He's like, shut up. I got to finish this. And he goes, I went to go see this kid. And I need to tell you. And you can't tell anyone. And like, I can't tell anyone. But now I've told you. So now I got it out of my system. But there's a guy in my organization that I signed for like $10,000 and a 5'11", you know, infielder. And now he's 6'7" and he runs a 6'1". I think I signed my own Fernando Tatis. And I go, what? He goes, yeah, I had to tell you because you can't do anything with this. I'm like, I hate you so much. I'm going to do something with this. And he goes, good luck. And I go, okay. So I start calling everyone I knew. I'm like, yo, we got an in. No one called me back. Nobody. And like, I could have called a bigger agency, but I was calling the people I wanted to help, not the Borises of the world who were going to get him anyway. And nobody small time that I could have gotten an in with would have landed him. So it didn't work out. But here's the part that I hated for me. So that's the tip of a lifetime. I went on eBay immediately to buy every card imaginable because I'm like, oh, a GCL Dominican kid from the Reds isn't going to cost me anything. That tip was so early. He didn't have cards yet.
Yeah, his first Bowman hadn't come out.
Correct. So I couldn't do anything with this information, as my friend was correct. And I did not make any money off Ellie De La Cruz, despite knowing about him before literally everyone.
Man, that is... That is tragic because Ellie De La Cruz's stuff now is popping.
Yeah, so the only free tip is Nelson Rada, the Angels kid. I own a Super Fractor. I own a ton of minor league stuff. Nelson Rada is the safest, easiest buy low on earth because he's an Angel. He's on the West Coast. He's in the worst organization for prospect values ever. And yet still, he's probably just as good or a hair below Jackson Chourio. So his stuff is so low right now, like a common. Like if you just buy it now and you wait until he gets named to the futures game, which is totally going to happen. That's not me predicting stuff or inside info. It's just I know how the futures games work. And I promise you, the 17-year-old guy who won a gold glove in high A last year will absolutely be going to the futures game as an 18-year-old in double A this year for the Angels. If you just buy them now and you sell them then when he's named to the futures game before even big league money. And that's the end of the speech tonight.
That, man, where can people, if people want more of this, which I think anyone still listening to this an hour in is gonna want more of this. Where are the places that people can follow you?
I'm being currently recruited to do a podcast and other projects. I've said no to everything because I'm a recluse. So you're limited to my socials and my Facebook group. It's the Kuznick Museum on Facebook and my TikTok, which is What Will Josh Say? And my Instagram, which is at Joshua Kuznick. And I'm on Twitter or X or whatever, but like I don't use it and I generally hate it. And it's funny because that's where you found me because I was working with my old client, John Mancone from Brella Sports.
Well, Josh, I don't think this is going to be the last conversation we have, but as for this episode, that's all we've got.
Yep.
Thank you so much for joining from Phenom of the Farm. I'm looking forward to talking to you again very soon.
Thank you.
And that's it for today's episode of From Phenom of the Farm. Big thanks to Josh Kuznick for stopping by the show, walking us through his journey. If you enjoy this one, please remember to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Episodes of Phenom of the Farm drop every other Tuesday. And make sure to subscribe to BaseballAmerica.com for all amateur baseball and prospect news. With that, we'll catch you in 2 weeks. Thanks for listening.